This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we'll begin our Friday Week in Review with the disturbing allegations of a lynching-style attack in Claremont, New Hampshire, on an 8-year-old boy. Here's the boy's uncle, Lyric Merlin.
He swung back and forth a few times. My niece was screaming. She was obviously quite shaken up. Luckily, it was not tied well, and he was able to free himself.
Now, no adult witnessed what happened. The boy's mother, Cassandra Merlin, says it was a racially motivated attack.
The fact that my son was biracial and these boys were of white descent.
Claremont, New Hampshire Police Chief Mark Chase is not discussing details of the case because everyone involved is a juvenile, but here's what he told CBS News.
I have faith that my officers are doing everything and anything they can to further investigate this little boy's injury.
The town of Claremont rallied against racism and hate on Tuesday, but NHPR reporter Brita Green said even that rally was marred by controversy.
The event's organizer, Rebecca McKenzie, was just introducing the night's first speaker when she was interrupted by a white man driving by and yelling from his truck. All lives matter, he proclaimed, responding to Black Lives Matter signs in the crowd. Stop making it about race, he said.
Well, there is much to discuss today, and joining us now to do so is Jennifer Nasur, former chair of the Massachusetts Republican Party. Jennifer, it's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Reverend Mariama White-Hammond. She's a minister at the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain. Reverend White-Hammond, it's good to have you back as well.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with you, Reverend White-Hammond. I mean, the story from Claremont, New Hampshire, we should say the alleged attack happened at the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually, part of the story is that it took a while for the rest of us to notice that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But so just, you know, what's your first thoughts?
Well, you know, I think what's most concerning to me is obviously that these are children. I heard a quote, you know, children don't come up with this on their own. How would you even know the word lynching unless you had been exposed to it somehow? I'm really concerned that something that a lot of us have said for a while is that the rhetoric has gotten so bad
mm-hmm.
at the sort of top and highest levels that at some point that begins to filter down. And it's really sad when that filters down to our children. So I don't want to comment on everything because I think there are many details to still come out. But having read a number of articles, what I read already is highly disturbing. And so the question is not just what happened, but how will we respond to
right.
it? And yeah, it's also a little concerning that it took this long for people to even hear about it. I think, you know, for the school administrators there, for people who are running after school programs or Boys and Girls Clubs or any kind of, how are children being helped to process this?
Right. And we should say that the sister of the little boy who was allegedly attacked goes to school with one of the other young people who is alleged to have participated
yeah.
in the incident. So it's a small community, and it's just complicated and hard on so many different levels. Jennifer, what's your thought?
So I have to say, as a parent, you know, that's I go back to exactly what you said, which is kids don't just come up with stuff on their own. It's what you are taught at home. It's the level of respect that you are brought up with.
Mm-hmm.
It's your parents' own beliefs. And I think, you know, that guy that was driving by during a vigil,
mm-hmm.
like, that's fine. Yes, all lives matter. I agree. However, it was a vigil for an 8-year-old boy who that should not have happened to. And, you know, I think that we live in a world right now where political correctness has gone out the window for we can just say anything we want to say and we can behave any way we want to behave. And I find something personally wrong with that, especially as a mom trying to raise kids today and to say, you know, not only say please and thank you, but hey, be nice to people.
Right.
Like just be nice, be a good friend, be a good person, and ignore all the other stuff that goes on. And I think that really that starts at home. I don't know how we change it unless people, adults, are willing to change themselves.
Right. Yeah. And I think this piece around just there's some basic manners.
Absolutely.
There's basic. You can disagree with people without attacking people. you know, every day I interact with people that we don't have the same opinion. Even in my own house, my husband and I don't like to load the dishwasher the same way. But there are ways to communicate those things without treating people in ways that lower their sense of human dignity. And that's where I think we've lost track. It's fine that we don't all agree. It's fine that we continue to debate. But the idea that I don't have to treat you as a human being, that I can treat you as a subhuman because I disagree with you, that I find deplorable. It's unacceptable, and it has become okay in our society, and I think we need to do something about that immediately.
Now, so forgive me, but are you talking about sort of the fact that at the vigil there was this response? Or,
right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's the first thing, but I do think this other question of how you're allowed to treat people is a problem.
And how we teach
because
that to
how
young people, right.
We tell kids not to bully, but then we do things to each other that demonstrate that it's okay to treat people with less than basic respect. Mm-hmm. And I don't know these children. I don't know their families. But what I will say is, as a society, I am disappointed by the lack of respect that we show to each other on a daily basis.
I think it should be the parents that get punished in this situation, not the kids, because the kids are reacting by how they're taught, right? And so if you let them watch movies, if you have, you know, language, it's like going to a restaurant and you sit and you know your kids, even if they're not paying attention, they're paying attention to how you interact with the wait staff. Do you say, you know, may I please have this and thank you? And, you know, do you leave a mess? Do you just say, well, leave the, you know, Cheerios under the table and crunch them all up and climb on top of the table? Like, it's just basic manners. It's a really horrible thing that happened, but I think it's a testament to where society is right now.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what makes it even more shocking, right? Because I have so many reactions. I mean, one is kind of along the lines of what you guys were saying, and that is, again, we should say these are allegations. There is an investigation going on. Governor Sununu in New Hampshire has the Attorney General's office, the state Attorney General's office, looking into this as well. So, you know, an investigation will conclude whatever it concludes. Mm-hmm. And so, as you've said, there's questions that remain to be answered. But for a moment, let's just presume or hypothesize that what the parents say happened. Mm-hmm. What are they teaching their children? What are these parents teaching their children such that young people allegedly thought it was okay to put a rope around an 8-year-old's neck and push him off a table and let him swing there? I mean, it's beyond bullying. You know, it's something deeper and something more vicious that it's so deeply disturbing to me.
See, and I would say I don't know if it is that much beyond bullying, because it's adding a different motivation on top of why they're bullying. But, you know, there is a way in which, and I used to run a youth program, so I would hear crazy stories about things that kids were saying to each other, what was happening in bathrooms. This sense that you make yourself look better by having people underneath you, that is unfortunately sometimes the way things have come to work in our schools, in our society. Being on top of other people is unfortunately how too many people find their self-respect. So I do think, you know, like I said, I am saddened. But unfortunately, as someone who has worked in schools with young people and lives in the society, I'm not shocked. Well, disappointed, but not shocked.
So what about the other issue which I think is raised here? And that is that initially the young boy's mother was really upset with what she felt was a lack of assistance that she was getting from law enforcement, which is why she felt like she had to go public and posted those pictures of her son's, you know, terribly wounded neck on Facebook. Because according to her actually, NH1 reported that the police chief at Claremont first talked to them and said, well, you know, we got to be careful about the young people who are alleged to have done this, because we don't want them to have a bad record following them for the rest of their lives. And of course, you got to think, like, well, what about the little boy who was virtually lynched for, right. I mean, I struggle to even say that word out loud, but that's what happened.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that is also disappointing. And I think there's two pieces to this. One is, there are ways to communicate to children that things are absolutely unacceptable. And I don't get the impression that that was, like, so maybe there was some sort of punishment that happened, some sort of meeting, some sort of, to deal with these young people and not just say, well, we're going to wait around till the end of the investigation and then we'll see, you know. So I do think moving on this immediately is really important. Anybody who's a parent who knows, if you have something that happens and you don't address it right away, you're sending the message that that was okay, right? So that's a problem. But I think it's also related to the reality that we have a hard time being honest about what is going on in our country. We have a hard time talking about race. And sometimes because people don't know how to handle it, the easiest thing is to pretend like it didn't happen. And that's a little bit of a human thing. When we don't know how to handle something, we try to just walk away.
Okay.
But it's also unacceptable.
So on that point, Jennifer, I'm going to come to you in a second. But on that point, kind of in a smaller way, the point that you're making, Mariama, I feel like it happened at Fenway Park here recently. And, and here's why. Because, of course, as we know, a group of fans at Fenway Park displayed a banner at Wednesday night's game. And they just dropped the banner on the Green Monster, and it said, racism is as American as baseball, okay? So pretty shocking thing to see in Fenway Park. And here's what two fans at the game said to Channel 5 that night.
I don't like mixing our politics with our sports. We come to places like this to kind of get away from that, escape from that, kind of unite. Sports tends to unite us more than anything else.
You don't expect it coming to Fenway, coming to a ball game like this. Boston is about love and coming together, not that.
So, I mean, I get what they're saying. Like, you go to Fenway Park, you want to see a baseball game and have a good time. But Jennifer, aren't there echoes in what those fans were saying in terms of what Mariama was saying? Like, we have a hard time talking about race. And I felt like those two fans captured it right then and there.
I mean, you know, so I guess I understand what those fans were talking about, because why then aren't we talking about gender and talking about that there's still a wage gap and that women are paid 87 cents on the dollar? I mean, where are the banners on that?
You might have just given someone an idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, ladies, go and do that the next Patriots game, right? I mean, so, you know, why are women still cheerleaders?
Yeah, I would love, you want to join me? I'm down to do a banner around the cheerleaders, because I'm a little annoyed.
So if we're going to open it up, then I don't think it's just racism. I'm going to go and say it's for gender. I'm going to go and say, you know, hey, all those single moms out there that are doing all the work and no one pays attention to them, they don't have any advances. Let's go talk about that. And let's go talk about the numbers of girls that are young women graduating from colleges that are over 50% women and still not getting paid the same amount. Women still don't have the same opportunities. People still, if you're going to apply to be in any club, any organization, are you married? Your marital status is still down there. Where's all that? So, I mean, I think, you know, there are lots of political issues to talk about. You know, maybe someone wants to talk about the wall. Maybe someone wants to talk about being deported, whatever it is. I just think that if we say it's okay for it to happen, what's going to happen is I think there's a little bit of use and enjoyment of it's a privilege to go to a game. It's not a right. To buy a ticket is a privilege. There's no constitutional right to buy a ticket. So go protest out on the street, because that's the place for it, out on the street. But inside, that's something that people earn the privilege to be there and to enjoy it. I think that there's a little bit of a separation there.
Mariama, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it's complicated. I'm not sure how efficacious I think that was, but here's what I'll say. One, I don't think we should have to choose between one issue or the other. I'm a woman who experiences the pay gap. I'm also a black person who experiences that. So there are plenty of issues. I don't think people should have to choose. And just because one wasn't highlighted, there's only so much you can fit on a banner. And so I'm okay with you choosing one issue. Because how long would that banner have had to be with everything that should change? So I'm okay with that.
Housing costs.
Right. There's a lot of looks. I think here's where the challenge is. And I feel two ways about it. On one hand, yeah, I understand people want to go to the game. On the other hand, the reality is some of us have to live with it and some people never, ever have to face it. And so there's this challenge where a lot of people get to opt into all these spaces where they're saying, oh, like, don't bring it to here. But then where do you have the conversation? So I do think people do need to have the conversation. I do think the Red Sox have some real historical things around issues of race.
Yeah, that's part of it.
I think that's part of the reason why it was selected. And I think the Red Sox, as an organization currently. I've been impressed with some of the things that they're doing. But I think the challenge for us is you don't move past things until you really move through things. And we haven't really moved through a lot of those things. And so I think there are attempts, and I think this was probably one of them, to try to get us to have a conversation that we're having a hard time having.
Yeah.
So I think I understand that people say, I just want to have a good time at the game. I get it. And at the same time, the reality is there is no space that actually is separated from these realities, even down to that person selling you the hot dog. Sometimes I want to know, are they being paid a good enough wage to be here? There's no separation from these issues that are life or death. So I think, you know, it's challenging.
Now, what I found interesting, though, was that picture. It looked like there were three white women holding the sign, too.
Which I actually think is great.
It was hysterical. I'm looking at the picture. I'm thinking, that's...
I think that's important. I think it's as important for white people to say,
right,
we got some hard conversations to have.
Yeah.
And join me. It won't kill us. We'll actually come out on the other side, and we might be better people if we have them.
You know, we could actually spend the entire time talking about this, about these stories, because, you know, they're constant, and they are ones that we all are living and should be grappling with. But I do want to get to another part of the week's news.
Okay.
And Jennifer, you actually kind of inadvertently hinted at it, because it has to do with immigration and DACA. Because I have to say, I think I'm a little confused about what the president's position
Wait,
is right now.
Why would you be confused? What possibly would confuse you?
We know he met with Senator Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi on Wednesday night. And here's what the president said to reporters yesterday before boarding, I should say, a very noisy Marine One.
We're working on a plan for DACA. People want to see that happen. You have 800,000 young people brought here, no fault of their own. So we're working on a plan. We'll see how it works out. But we're going to get massive border security as part of that.
Now, Nancy Pelosi spoke at a Capitol Hill press conference yesterday, and she said, actually, in her mind, the Democrats have come to a deal with the president.
We agreed to a plan to work out an agreement to protect our nation's dreamers from deportation. We insisted that the Bipartisan Dream Act would be the basis for the protection and that we would review border security measures that do not include building a wall.
Okay. But then House Speaker Paul Ryan, right after that, held a press conference of his own, and he said, no deal yet.
We have not begun negotiations. What we're doing is talking with ourselves here in our majority to make sure that we are all on the same page ourselves before we proceed on all of these things. And it's right and proper that the president talks with the other party. These were discussions, not negotiations. There isn't an agreement.
Jennifer, deal or no deal?
Honestly, it's keeping all of us really intrigued, I have to say, right? I mean, the good thing is all of this makes more people interested in politics on both sides.
Because we have no choice. Nobody
knows
what's going
on. We're not
on.
Really sure where it's going. So I would say this. Trump currently seems to, and I don't know if he does or not because I'm not in his head, thank God, but the president seems to severely dislike the Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan.
I was like, oh, you say Republican leadership?
He seriously dislikes a lot of Republicans right now. So
a lot of Republicans dislike him, too.
Yes.
I mean, wasn't it Ann Coulter who just tweeted, here it is, put a fork in Trump. At this point, who doesn't want Trump impeached?
Yes.
I mean, if you've lost Ann Coulter, you've lost conservative Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely still know a couple of them. and some might actually be related to me. Scary enough. But I think, you know, Trump had to play footsie with the Democrats, right? Trump, whether he knows it or not, I think General Kelly understands that politics is a numbers game. All you need are the numbers in your favor. If he goes to Pelosi and to Schumer, has a conversation with them about, you know, how do you get to keep what you want to keep? And maybe I don't, but I can work something else in there. And I know there are a couple of moderates that will vote with you guys because they keep voting with you guys anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do that? And, you know, they're more than happy to get what they want. And there's no wall. There was never going to be a wall. That was the biggest scam out there. We're going to build a wall. We're not building a wall. We have no money to build a wall. Mexico's not paying for it. So, you know, and by the way, you're also not sending back all of these people. That's the other thing you're also not doing. So everyone knew that from the very beginning, except for the people that voted for him and really thought that he was going to send people back, round them up, send them back.
That's not an insignificant number of people, though.
No, not insignificant. Yeah, right? But now they're dwindling because his numbers are in the mid-30s. And so, I think that there probably is a deal on DACA, and he absolutely needs to get a win in his column.
Uh-huh.
And the easiest thing for him right now is to say, okay, we can keep the Dreamers Act and maybe make some tweaks to it. So maybe his tweaks are that the kids who are here can't be sponsors of their parents.
Right.
But he had to get something, but he didn't get anything as big as the wall in exchange for that.
Mariama?
Well, you know, I remember when MTV came out with the reality TV show The Real World, and I don't think they should have gotten to use that title because I feel like that's what we're living in. I'm just waiting for the commercial break. You get one tweet at 6:11, and before you can digest it, you've got another tweet 15 seconds later that seems different than what you just read. I don't know how to translate that or understand that. But I will say it would be funny if it weren't also sad.
Well, at least with the DACA part, there's 800,000 young people who are wondering what's going to happen.
There's the question of young people's fate, and then for me, there's even the deeper piece, which is, you know, integrity. Like, your word needs to be your word. And I get that, like, there are different interpretations, but it does start to get problematic when you feel like you can't tell one minute to the next what somebody just said. So that, you know, I want us to get to a point, like, and even if I disagree with you, I generally would like to understand that your yay is yay and your nay is nay.
Especially if you're president of the United States.
That's my funny part.
I mean, because, you know, you kind of look at, if you want to dumb down politics a little bit and you want to look at the president of the United States as the parent, right? This is the person who's setting the course and showing you the path to go down, and then says, you're grounded. You can go to that party. But no, you can't go to that party. I never said you could go to that party. You have to stay at home. But no, now you can go. Just for a little bit, right? And so it's like, how confusing does it end up being? The people I feel worse for are Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, because those two are just sitting there with all these members breathing down their necks. They have no idea what's going on because they have an erratic president who can't make up his mind and make a decision. And
I gotta say, I 100% do not feel bad for them.
Well,
mostly because, you know, not in terms of like what the president has done since he became president, but he is exactly the same as he was today as he was during the entire campaign.
Well, and that is true.
I don't think either of those
guys ever wanted Trump to be president. And again, can't speak for them. I have no idea. But I have to say that when you are the top dogs, and then you have someone who comes in above you and screws up all the work you're trying to do, it has to be a little bit frustrating. And they knew that that was going to happen. They knew that they had someone who, he's a businessman. He's going to act in his best interest. He's not going to act in, and he, as far as I'm concerned, he's not a real Republican. He's never been a real Republican. He became a Republican 9 years ago. He belonged to the other side. He just happened to come to our side because that's where he thought that he could win. And
there's only one side. There's his side.
There's the Trump side.
And the one thing I will say is consistently throughout his life, he's always been the most important person to himself. So I think the larger point, I guess, for me, and as I know folks who are directly affected by this, people are making life choices without understanding where their lives are going.
Exactly.
And so I hope they have some kind of deal that is clear and is soon, because leaving people in limbo is just wrong.
It is. You know, this is the first time in a week in review where we have run out of time for Hubbubs, which is actually a good thing because all of us have had kind of a tumultuous couple of first weeks of September. So I'm going to give us all a break, right? Jennifer Nasur, former chair of the Massachusetts Republican Party, it's always great to have you. Thank you so much. much.
Thank you.
And Mariama White Hammond, Reverend Mariama White Hammond at the Bethel AME Church in JP. Reverend Hammond, White Hammond, thank you so much as always.
Thank you.
It's a great week in review. We'll be back with more Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.